Kroger, an annual Boost membership just got even better. Now you can choose from Disney Plus with ads, Hulu with ads, or ESPN Plus on us when you sign up. Plus, enjoy unlimited free delivery, double fuel points, exclusive offers, and free items. Sign up for a Boost membership today. It's an easier way to save, including new streaming options to relax with while we deliver your groceries. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
Ryan Reynolds here from Mint Mobile. With the price of just about everything going up during inflation, we thought we'd bring our prices down. So to help us, we brought in a reverse auctioneer, which is apparently a thing.
Mint Mobile Unlimited Premium Wireless. How to get 30, 30, how to get 30, how to get 20, 20, 20, how to get 20, 20, how to get 15, 15, 15, 15, just $15 a month? Sold!
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front payment equivalent to $15 per month. New customers on first 3 month plan only. Taxes and fees extra. Speeds slower above 40 gigabytes in detail.
Holiday magic is in the air, and DSW's got all the shoes to make your season extra merry. Believe, you've got parties to attend and lists to check twice, so DSW is taking care of the details, like gifts to make their eyes all aglow, styles that bring joy to your world, brands everyone wants, like UGG, Nike, Birkenstock, and more, and deals to make your budget bright. Find the perfect shoes for you and yours at a DSW store near you or DSW.com.
Oh my God, it's the coolest thing ever. Hey guys, have you heard of Goldbelly? Well, check this out. It's this amazing site where they ship the most iconic famous foods from restaurants across the country anywhere nationwide. I've never found a more perfect gift than food. They ship Chicago deep dish pizza, New York bagels, Maine lobster rolls, and even Ina Garten's famous cakes. Seriously. So if you're looking for a gift for the food lover in your life, head to goldbelly.com and get 20% off your first order with promo code GIFT.
I just got to do one thing just to set up, and that is
reverb.
No, that is so that all three cameras, I can line them up with, like, you know, clapperboard.
Ah, yes.
And also the audio of that clap's going to come through, so I can line it all up.
I like it. Very professional.
I'm learning. Right.
Straight in. No messing.
Well, I'm just going to leave it to pause, and then I'm going to introduce it.
What are you there? Beer, cider?
Beer.
Because
that's what I do. I drink and I know things.
Good old beer. All right. We're going.
Okay. Today's episode, 1947, was the year the world went crazy about flying saucers.
Started in 1947.
It was in 1947. Imagine this. World War II has just ended a couple of years before. The Cold War has just started. America versus the Soviets. No one knows what's going on in the skies, but there's these strange things appearing. And particularly by one man, Kenneth Arthur, started it all off. He was a civilian pilot flying over the United States. I'm not sure what he was doing up there. There's rumours that he was searching for crashed planes or something like that. I'm not sure what his intended mission was for the flight. But he was overtaken by several objects moving at absolutely wild speeds. Speeds that he couldn't imagine at that time in 1947. And when he landed and reported it, he described them as moving as though a saucer skipping over a pond.
Okay.
Now, we're not sure if he was describing the shape of the craft or whether he was just simply trying to describe the movement, but that's how he described it, and the papers ran with it. They loved it, and next day, flying saucers, you know, all over the headlines.
Everywhere.
We're being invaded. All right, so, and that's what kicked it off. Now,
so can I just ask, yeah, at this point, with the flying saucers, was there any mention of aliens at all, or just the flying saucers?
Just flying saucers. That's all that was reported. No one knew what they were. They didn't know if it was a Soviet invention. You know, there might be Soviet spies on them or something like that. No one really knew. It was the start of the Cold War.
Yeah.
Nothing to do with aliens had ever been suggested at this point.
Okay, so this is a fresh story.
Absolutely fresh. And obviously, at that time, newspapers were the only way that it was, you know, this news was being passed around.
Mm-hmm.
No one had TV, if it was even invented back then. Radio was invented, but not everybody had one in their house, or a telephone.
So was this the classic days of you got the little kid on the bike throwing the newspapers, hitting your front door?
Absolutely.
And that's how you got your news?
Yeah, people actually saw in black and white. There was no colour back then. but yeah, so there's this rancher. Mm-hmm. He went by the name of Mac Brazel. And he lived on a ranch and worked a ranch not too far from Roswell, New Mexico. Mm. And as he was out one day, wandering around his ranch, as he does, he found some shimmering metal artifacts on the floor. Some wreckage, if you like.
Mm-hmm.
And being a responsible rancher, what did he do? He picked it up and he shoved it under a brush to forget about it. And he did forget about it for several weeks.
Okay.
Until he went into town and picked up a copy of the local newspaper, or it was a national newspaper, with the headlines of flying saucers are invading and all this sort of thing.
But even if that was airplane wreckage, why would you hide that in a bush and just forget about it? Surely you'd report that.
He just didn't want his sheep tripping up on it and getting, you know, damaged ankles or whatever.
Oh, so he just wasn't that bothered. He just thought, you know, I'll hide this wreckage and come back to it another time.
Yeah, basically. And that's what he did until he found the newspaper, and then he sort of put two and two together and he was like, oh, well, if these flying saucers are in the sky, maybe one's crash landed.
Mm-hmm.
So he went back to his ranch, picked up the stuff on a Monday morning, took it down the sheriff's office in Roswell. The sheriff naturally didn't necessarily think it was aliens either, but it could be Soviet in design, you know, spy plane or something like that.
Yeah.
Could be. So he rang up the military, Roswell Army Air Base, mm-hmm. and they sent out a guy called Major Jesse Marcel.
Mm.
He was the first military man on point there to actually witness it. And he is the guy that gathered up all the wreckage, stuck it in his truck, and took it home to his wife and kid for the night.
Okay.
As you do.
Professional.
As you do. And so, yeah, they had a nice night looking through all his wreckage, and we'll revisit that in a little while, because his son actually becomes a major sort of factor in the story in later years.
Oh, okay.
But yeah, the next day he took the wreckage into the military base, reported it, said, what we believe we've got in maybe a downed UFO, a flying saucer. UFOs weren't, you know, I think.
Oh, UFO came after flying
saucer. Yeah, the term UFO was much later. They were just flying saucers at the time. And so that's what they did. They released this report to the media saying, oh, we found this crashed flying saucer.
Mm.
And the newspaper published it, as they do, because that's what journalists do, isn't it? And then the next day, the commanding officer, even higher up, came into work, put his feet up on the desk, read the paper. What's on the front page? We recovered a flying saucer. We can't be saying that.
Oh, they sweep it under the rug.
That sort of thing. We haven't confirmed it. So he sent an order, bring me the wreckage. I want to see this for myself.
Mm-hmm.
And he got like his, I don't know, mechanic or something like that to come and confirm it with him. And in a few hours, they identified it as a weather balloon. The wreckage of a weather balloon.
Mm.
Now, this is not too far-fetched, to be honest, at this point. The military, well, not in the military, but scientists were using weather balloons to study weather patterns. And also, the other thing is that the military were sending up high-powered microphones on weather balloons, so they'd go high up into the atmosphere. Remember, this is 1947, mm-hmm. Cold War, post-First World War. America had shown their hand. The world knew they had nuclear technology. The two drums that they'd dropped on Hiroshima and Nagasaki were big news, you know. Everybody knew that they'd got the atomic bomb. But America didn't know if Russia had got the atomic bomb.
So at this point in time, with the Cold War and everything, I'm assuming everything is military, everything's kind of war-based, everyone's still on their toes. There's not a sense of peace at this time, I'm guessing, in 1947.
There is peace, but it's an edgy time.
Okay.
You know, no military factor, whether it's US or Russia, wants to show off what they've got. You know, they don't want to show any advantage or disadvantage.
Keeping their cards close to their chest.
Yeah, exactly. But that's basically what they chalked it down to. It was a weather balloon. All right, they were using it for maybe some clandestine purposes with a high-power microphone, just trying to see if they could hear and detect atomic bombs being let off over Russia.
Mm,
you
know? Okay.
Because you can't see that far. The curvature of the Earth, which we'll cover in a different episode, prevents it, but you can hear.
What do you mean? The Earth is flat?
No. Right. But yeah, that's what it got chalked up as, and to be honest, Roswell fell into the history books and everybody just kind of forgot about it. There's no more mention of like flying saucers, UFOs, or anything like that until the late 70s.
Oh, when... we're skipping quite far ahead.
Oh, yeah.
So for 20 years, people just didn't...
30 years.
30 years. 30 they just years. Didn't care. They
didn't
were like...
care. Got forgotten about, swept under the table.
Oh, yeah, because you said that the guy found out on the front page and swept it all under the rug. And so 30 years have gone by and everyone just kind of forgot about
it. Yeah, everybody's forgotten about it. Until this one guy, a ufologist. Oh. UFOs are now starting to increase in sightings, you know, around the world. There are people that are starting to take interest. And this one guy, Stanton Friedman.
Oh, what a name.
Yeah, he's quite well known in the ufology world.
Mm-hmm.
Got quite a recognizable face. I'll show you a picture sometime. For those of us watching the video podcast, I might find a picture of him and put that on the screen. He's quite predominant in the ufology circles, and he went and found Major Jesse Marcel, who at this point had retired as a lieutenant colonel or something like that. And it was at this point that Jesse Marcel came out about some of the things that were not disclosed about the wreckage.
Oh.
It was then that Marcel admitted that he didn't think the wreckage had come from any man-made object.
So not a weather balloon.
Not a weather balloon. Not by the looks of things. There's a very famous picture, I'm sure if you've ever looked into Roswell at all, you'll recall a picture, a black and white picture of a military dressed man crouching on the floor holding what looks like a sheet of tin foil.
No, the only thing I know about Roswell is there was a flying saucer crash. It's okay. The only thing I know. So okay. I've not seen a picture. I've not. Well,
I will find you the picture.
Okay.
If my phone will let me.
So this guy, this is not the son that you said we'll come back to. This is the actual
guy, if I can find a picture of him.
And I'm guessing he was quite high up in the military.
Well, he was a major. Well, the thing, originally he was part of the nuclear bomb testing. So that's, here's the picture, look, see?
Okay. No, I've not seen that before, but that's very interesting.
That is a very famous picture.
Okay. Did that make the newspapers or?
Yeah, that was in the newspapers. But when Stanton Friedman interviewed Jesse Marcel, Marcel indicated that they had actually faked those pictures. It was done to make it look as though it was just natural wreckage that they'd found. He is, in fact, actually holding just tinfoil. And he said, in the interview with Friedman, he said they'd reconstructed the wreckage because they had, in fact, found this tinfoil-like sheet of metal, but he said you couldn't bend it.
Solid.
It was solid. It didn't have an ounce of flex in it. And that tinfoil in that picture that I just showed you obviously has creases and crimples in it, and it is just tinfoil. So they've recreated the wreckage specifically for the purpose of, you know, misdirecting.
So it was as thin as tinfoil.
It was as thin as tinfoil.
Sturdy.
But as strong as steel.
Wow.
You couldn't bend it at all. There was also, not featured in that picture, but Jesse Marcel Jr., his son, talked quite openly about a metal bar or beam. I'm not sure exactly what dimensions were, how big it was, but it was emblazoned with purple hieroglyphs that he'd never seen. They weren't Egyptian, it weren't Greek or anything like that.
Different language.
A completely unknown language, unknown symbols, never seen before or since.
Wow, okay.
This wreckage has all been taken away and put wherever the government put it. And Marcel then also admitted to having a visit several nights after taking the wreckage into the military compound from a group of gentlemen who just identified themselves as his superiors.
Oh.
Although when he asked, you know, what cabinet they work for, they said, we work for a department that you wouldn't recognize.
That's a great voice for a like detective style person.
Thank you. But that is very well the first recorded instance of the Men in Black.
Oh, I like the Men in Black. I like the conspiracy theory of the Men in Black. Okay. Not the film. Not the film.
No. Well, Men in Black is something we may cover in future episodes.
Okay.
That's my take. I believe personally that is the first instance of the Men in Black coming into public life.
See, when you said he had a visit, my brain went aliens.
We've not seen any aliens. No, actually, that's a fair point to make, because Stanton Friedman didn't just interview Major Jesse Marcel. He also interviewed several other people that were reported to be there handling the wreckage, helping clearing it up, that sort of thing. Several people claimed that they saw alien bodies.
In the wreckage.
And they were taken back to the military base along with the metal and whatever else was discovered. Major Jesse Marcel never ever claimed to see bodies.
Just the wreckage. Just the foils type material. And
Some other people also claimed to see a great gouge in the ground where the UFO had sort of scraped away the topsoil as it was coming down, you know? Again, Marcel never claimed to see that. All he saw was quite widely dispersed wreckage.
Yeah.
It was sort of over the area of like nearly a square mile. You know, the stuff covered quite an area of ground. So an actual gouge out of the ground, very unlikely. And bodies, Marcel never claimed to see that. That was only other people that may have only had a passing sort of... what do I want to say? they might not have been fully part of the actual clearings or whatever. So it's highly speculative. The government did come back to that about the bodies, saying, "Oh, it must be crash test dummies because they'd been doing altitude tests, dropping crash test dummies out of planes." To see what the effects of parachutes were on human bodies.
Already.
Because parachutes were only an early invention at the time.
Okay, yeah.
The thing is, those tests weren't carried out until 1953.
5 years later.
So if it's to be believed that people saw bodies, it cannot have been crash test dummies.
See, I was going to say, they've already contradicted themselves with the weather balloon, and now they're saying crash test dummies.
Well, the crash test dummies, I suppose, could have been attached to the weather balloon, but it's very unlikely.
Yeah, I mean, why would you need them up?
We're basically talking about two different experiments here, aren't we? A weather balloon and crash test dummies being tested for parachute, whatever.
Yeah.
It's got to be two different things.
Mm-hmm.
It can't be related. And the alien bodies, particularly since Marcel himself, you know, openly stated, "No, I didn't see anything alien bodies. It was just wreckage. Wreckage that I can't necessarily explain. I don't believe that it was of this world."
Mm.
And obviously Marcel didn't really enter the public spotlight any further after that. But his son did. And his son has been on various television programs. He's written books. Stanton Friedman, the ufologist that was interviewing them, wrote the foreword to his book, you know, saying how dedicated he was to the truth and that sort of thing. And, you know, he was an upstanding citizen, you know, doing his best, to explain the real true events. I don't have the book to reference from, I'm afraid.
It's all right. We'll find it.
But, you know, I'm going with what I've researched and what I believe is sort of the true facts.
Mm-hmm.
And I've got to say, mate, on the paranormality scale that we discussed in the pilot episode that we were going to go, this story starts off with a very, very low paranormality.
Yeah, I thought it was a weather balloon.
We're talking one, two, tops three out of ten on the paranormality scale. But with you know, in the 70s and 80s, with these interviews that Stan and Friedman was doing, I mean, it does come up a little bit, particularly when they're saying you couldn't bend a sheet of metal that's as light and, you know, thin as tinfoil.
Yeah, it reminds me of that. I think it was you that told me about that element, the element that's not in this or from this world. Element 115.
We're getting ahead of ourselves a little bit there.
It just reminds me of that, where the sheet of metal clearly isn't from this earth.
No, exactly. The thing is, when we go into that sort of thing, if you could actually get hold of that wreckage and that metal, we can test whether the metal even comes from this area of the galaxy.
Okay.
Because all metals are formed when stars basically go supernova, or particularly giant stars go massive explosions. They create all of the heavy elements, gold, silver, steel, you know, iron is basically a star killer. But all metals have like an isotopic value, which kind of means like how many molecules make up that metal. And the isotopic value is very much contained within a very small area of the galaxy. So whatever star blew up and made aluminium on our planet,
or aluminum to Americans,
say, that aluminum or aluminium would have a different isotopic value to an aluminium that was made on the other side of the galaxy.
Oh, okay.
So you could easily test whether it's even an Earth-based metal by checking the isotopic value within that metal. But obviously we don't have the metal to test it. That's locked away in a government bunker somewhere.
No one's seen it since.
No one's seen it since. And we just don't know whether it's from the Earth or not.
The thing that makes me think it's gone up in the paranormality scale is the purple hieroglyphics.
Because yes,
clearly there's a different language going on. That in itself, to me, gives me a bit of the shivers, a bit of the heebie-jeebies. So I'd have to put it higher because of that.
Yeah, I think so too. And a lot of the interviews that Jesse Marcel Jr. came forward and said, he talked a lot about sort of playing with that wreckage and you know, just the weird properties of it. The fact that when they really tried, I think they tried to bend it with a vice or something like that, and it just, even if they could get a little bit of bend on it, just sprang straight back into place.
Wow.
They couldn't, it wasn't like a bar of iron, you know, or a metal stake, and a fencing stake, if you like, but if you bend it on your knee, it will stay bent, you know. This was almost like it had been quenched, so it was always going to pop. Ooh,
quenched, that's a lovely word.
Well, you know, in metallurgy. But it would spring back into the shape that it was designed to be in, and they couldn't damage it. It wouldn't scratch. It wouldn't, they you know, you couldn't etch into it with anything that they'd got at the time. Maybe with a high power laser like we've got these days, you might be able to etch into it, but with nothing that they'd got at the time, they could not damage it. So how does an undamageable sheet of metal come to be damaged in the middle of a freaking desert?
Yeah. I mean, also, how did no one else see it? Because I'm also thinking, if you get asteroids, comets, things like that, it's going to leave a crater. You're going to see the flames or whatever coming across the sky. So how did this land?
It was a ranch. A ranch. Yeah. It's actually, I think it's about 80 miles from Roswell.
It's in the middle,
closer to a town of Corona.
Oh,
but in New Mexico.
So that
we
is
we all love a bit of Corona.
Keeping it modern. So it's in the middle of nowhere then.
Yeah,
it
is absolutely in the middle of nowhere.
Well, that rules that out then.
The ranch itself is probably, I don't know, tens of or hundreds of square miles.
Acres.
Yeah, in like acres, hectares, however you want to measure your land. Probably is massive.
So I want to know more. So what happened in the end then? It was just the guy Stanton working with Marcel Jr.?
Yeah.
Making books and...
That's all they've done basically ever since. So Stanton Friedman has gone on to be one of the most world-renowned ufologists. Anybody who claims to have been abducted, he's the guy that operated on them and got all the little chips out and all that sort of thing.
Oh, very well-respected.
Well-respected within the UFO community. He's basically, like, the number one ufologist. He invented the term, if you like.
Okay.
But, yeah, I mean, you could pick up his book and read it to get more information. But to me... The early part of the story, like I said, very low on a paranormality scale.
Mm-hmm.
But by the end of it, when you start interviewing people and getting the inside story, not just the official story, it starts going up and up and up and up. And I'd like to settle at around about a 6 or a 7 on the paranormality scale. Because, I mean, the problem is we can't prove it these days. We can't get the wreckage and analyze it. We can't send it to a lab somewhere and say, is this of planet Earth or is it from somewhere else? You know, we just don't have that ability. Wherever that wreckage is, it is buried at the bottom of a bunker somewhere.
There's no way of finding it.
There's no way of finding it. The government are never going to release it for analysis anyway, are they?
They never do anything to help us out.
No. So all we can do is go by the research that these people did back in the 70s and 80s. Some of it we got to disregard. But alien bodies, I think we got to disregard. Because that obviously leads on to the alien autopsy video.
Yes.
But... Hello, one of the cameras is going funny.
It doesn't like me.
Yeah, but the alien autopsy video, again, was debunked, and the people who created it kind of came out and said, yeah, it was a fake.
Yeah, so. It was a puppet or something.
Exactly. So, you know, where people have been trying to tie these two events together, it's quite flimsy. So it brings it back down.
I always assumed those two things were linked together.
Well, I think you'd meant to believe that they are.
Yeah.
But I don't think they are. Because I do believe that that was a fake video.
Mm-hmm. The alien did look freaky, though.
It was a very well
made. That gave me nightmares.
Puppet. Yeah, it was very well made, very well taken apart, I suppose. but yeah, those two events, I think they clearly didn't happen.
Mm-hmm.
I would so love to believe that they did find alien bodies there. There was even rumour that one of them was still alive and they interviewed it and all that sort of thing.
You interviewed an alien?
Yeah, but at the end of the day, like I say, Jesse Marcel, Major Jesse Marcel, the first military man on the scene, he didn't see any. They were, as far as he's concerned, they weren't there. This is just fabrications from other people who were getting a little bit excited about it. And that's what I believe. But I'd still believe that, you know, what he said about the metal and like the hieroglyphs and that sort of thing, particularly like his son's been going on for years and years and years. I think he only died like a few years ago, about 2017 at the age of like 71 or something like that. Please don't correct me if I'm wrong, internet. I know he died in his 70s. But yeah, I think there's a lot of scope for it to be something strange that they weren't they probably didn't even think of it at the time because no one had encountered anything like this before.
Yeah.
And I think the government's own natural ability to call it a weather balloon is they're just trying to make sense of it because they don't know anything about extraterrestrials or outer space or, you know, any of this stuff. And they've just got a pile of metal wreckage. Oh, just the most likely thing is a weather balloon.
Yeah. So yeah. It was probably shock as well, wasn't it?
Exactly, yes. So but I still think there's enough in there to give it above a 5. I'm going to settle it right 6.
6. I think 10. 6 is fair.
You think that's fair?
Yeah. I mean, I was going to give it a 5, but then with the hieroglyphs, like you say, the steel, the metal. Yeah, I think 6 is fair.
Yeah.
If there was alien bodies and stuff involved, you'd have to give it a 7.
If there was genuinely alien bodies involved, I think we'd be going up to an 8, but...
Yeah,
I would need more proof.
Yeah,
I definitely need more proof.
I mean, at this point, it is such a long time ago, and it's just you've got to take these stories and things as gospel, haven't you? Because like you say, the guy died in his 70s. So, you know, you have to kind of only go by the stories. You haven't got those people to speak to today.
No.
So books, stories, Wikipedia.
But, I mean, this is literally probably the first and world's biggest government conspiracy.
It's a classic, isn't it?
It is a classic.
Everyone knows, you know, but the word Roswell.
If you look on Wikipedia, it is fairly claimed to be debunked.
No. You know,
everybody's gone over the evidence that is available time and time and time again. The government to this day still insists that it was a weather balloon. Okay, it might have been this super secret special kind of weather balloon that's got a microphone on it to detect Russians, but it's still, at the end of the day, the official report, weather balloon.
That makes me sad.
It is a little bit sad.
See,
and all we can go by is the opinions of people who were there at the time.
Yeah.
But are no longer with us. And yeah, it's sad. It's, you know, we're now, this year, at the time of this recording, it's 75 years since the event. Oof,
it's a long time ago.
And I think we've just got to put a lid on it now.
We're done with Roswell.
It's got to be. I mean, Roswell itself has done really well out of it commercially. It is the center of the UFO world, isn't it?
Yeah.
Let's face it. If you've heard of aliens and you haven't heard of Roswell, who the fuck are you?
I imagine Roswell have a lot of tourists as well.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, lots.
So they're booming. They're happy.
Yeah.
But I'm not going to lie. I've put it down to a 5 now. It was a 6. But now that they've debunked it, 5. No.
Well, no, because, I mean, the official term is that they've debunked it. But yeah. I still think there's a little wiggle room there. I'm leaving it as a 6. My personal opinion.
All right, we'll go for a 6.
You haven't got to agree with me. You can have your own.
5.5. I'll meet you halfway. Literally halfway. Okay. I'll meet you there. 5.5.
That's a good place to be. Anyway, I think we're around about at the end of our time. Let us know in the comments section, if there's a comment section, where you download your podcasts or watch your podcast, what you think, whether you agree with the paranormality scale and our rating. And if you don't agree, then that's even better, because we love a topical debate. And if you'd like to get in touch with us with your story, get in touch at paranormality.uk@gmail.com. And one of us will get back to you, and we'd love to hear your story as well, because we love hearing other people's stories.
Yeah, I really want to hear some more stories. I like the personal experiences of things and aliens, ghosts, conspiracy theories. Even if people have heard today's episode and they've got stuff to add to the Roswell, maybe things that we couldn't find or
maybe
discuss.
Maybe.
They might even sway us to move the scale a little bit. I could end up at a 6 with
like negative figures.
Well, it depends if they want to debunk it anymore. It might end up as a 4 at this point. But you never know. It could make me go up to a 6 with you.
Right, I'm going to settle solidly at about a 6. Because it's hard to sway either way. I mean,
you've got to give it respect. It is one of the originals.
It
is. Roswell. It's an original. So.
It is. At the end of it, you can only take those later interviews to actually give it that sort of paranormal sort of edge. Other than that, it is just find some crash wreckage. Oh, we'll tell the military. Oh, it's fucking weather balloon.
Yeah, that's it. Story done. Yeah, everywhere online says it's a weather balloon. So, yeah, okay, cool.
But anyway, that was my take on Roswell. This is episode... Well, I guess this is properly episode 1, because we did a
an introduction.
We did a pilot before, but we didn't do video on that one. So this one is going to be, particularly for YouTube, is going to be episode 1. Josh, what are you bringing to us for episode 2? I said that you could take on one.
Well, you know me. I'm into my conspiracy theories. So I'm gonna do some research. I might do Mandela effects. I might do Birds Aren't Real. I might do some sort of conspiracy, I imagine, because that's my bread and butter. Okay. I love a good conspiracy theory. I might carry on with today's and maybe delve into the Men in Black. Is that technically a conspiracy theory?
Well, it's certainly interesting enough to make a podcast out of.
Well, I've seen videos.
Oh.
I've seen some videos. It's
some real-life Men in Black.
I haven't seen them in real life, but I have seen some videos that are very convincing.
No more. We'll leave it for you for the next episode. So if you're looking forward to that, tune in. on a release date. Not sure when that'll be yet, but we'll tune in, download it, watch it on YouTube, however you like to watch us, and we will see you again next time. Thank you very much.
Ta-ta.
Oh my God, it's the coolest thing ever. Hey guys, have you heard of Goldbelly? Well, check this out. It's this amazing site where they ship the most iconic, famous foods from restaurants across the country, anywhere nationwide. I've never found a more perfect gift than food. They ship Chicago deep dish pizza, New York bagels, Maine lobster rolls, and even Ina Garten's famous cakes. Seriously. So if you're looking for a gift for the food lover in your life, head to goldbelly.com and get 20% off your first order with promo code GIFT.
Hey marketers, are you ready to discover the latest trends in podcast advertising? The Podcast Pulse Report by Acast is out now, packed with fresh audience insights into why podcasts are a must-have marketing strategy. Learn how podcast audiences are more engaged than ever, why hosts are trusted voices for brands, and how niche shows are delivering massive impact. Download the report today at podcastpulse2024.acast.com.
At Kroger, an annual Boost membership just got even better. Now you can choose from Disney Plus with ads, Hulu with ads, or ESPN Plus on us when you sign up. Plus, enjoy unlimited free delivery, double fuel points, exclusive offers, and free items. Sign up for a Boost membership today. It's an easier way to save, including new streaming options to relax with while we deliver your groceries. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Restrictions apply. See site for details.